I'm just a bill. Yes, I'm only a bill. And I'm sitting here on Capitol Hill. Well, it's a long, long journey to the capital city. It's a long, long wait while I'm sitting in committee. But I know I'll be a law someday. At least I hope and pray that I will. But today I am still just a bill. I'm just a bill. Yes, I'm only a bill. And I got as far as capital.
You're tuned to KDWA AM 1460, FM 97.7, and you're tuned in to another segment of Community In-Depth. I'm your host for this segment, Mike Rood, and I've got our weekly Senate update, and with me today is Senator Carla Bigham. Good day, Senator.
Thank you for having me, Mike.
It's always a pleasure to have you in and talk about what's going on during the current session. It's been a very busy week up at the Capitol, I understand. A lot of things going on. I'd like to start with, you had a press conference this past week regarding legislation for mental health counseling for emergency services personnel.
Yes, you know, we have in the first responders in the emergency services personnel, we have peer support groups and critical incident debriefing. And what that means is when there's a call that is extraordinarily difficult, they have peer support groups. And that is a very good way, as we all know, to debrief on the situation, to help you process what you've seen. Because as the daughter of a firefighter and the sister of a firefighter, I know firsthand that they don't unsee what they've seen. I mean, when we're all running away from something, they're running into it. It takes a special kind of person to jump into a freezing cold river to save someone. And that's exactly what these folks do. And they see the worst of the worst. And then they're expected to move on to the next call. Or in my brother's situation, where he's a paid on-call firefighter, he's expected to go do his day job after being up all night saving people from burning buildings and other disastrous situations. It is a difficult job. And what's happening is, in situations where there may be questions, they're being told not to speak to attorneys. And the fact is, we need to protect that information, because due to fear of whether it's discrimination or retaliation of a legal proceeding, they're not talking. They're not getting this off their chest. They're not getting it off their mind. And then that bucket fills up, Mike, and then there's just been a spike in suicides among emergency service personnel.
Right. And it's not something, like you say, you can just turn off and go back right to their regular routine. They need to process this. Sometimes it takes some counseling, and sometimes, you know, they're dealing with attorneys.
So we're trying to protect those groups that allow the peer support groups and the information that is disclosed in those peer support groups, so that there's no fear of discrimination. There's no fear that it'll be used against you in a legal proceeding.
Okay. Where is that bill then right now? Is it still in committee? Is it moving through?
Absolutely. It's in Judiciary Committee. It has no fiscal note, and it only has one stop. So, you know, the legislative session is a little bit fluid right now due to the coronavirus, and our schedule is a little bit in flux. So I'm hoping that we still can get this through this year. And it's been introduced in the House. Representative Hewitt has it, and we're going to keep pushing it. We had Attorney General Ellison and Public Safety Commissioner Harrington, along with Dakota County Police officers, Washington County police officers, Cottage Grove police officer Mike Vandervoort, who actually brought the idea to me. They were all there, and the press conference really laid out for the media, for the public, the importance of this legislation. So, you know, I'm 41. I've been doing this since I've been 25 years old. Little bit of a hiatus throughout those years, but this is probably one of the most important pieces of legislation I've had the honor of working on, and we're going to continue to push it because it is so vitally important for our emergency service personnel, and it's going to save lives. And so if we can get this through this year, that would be absolutely fantastic.
And with the only one stop in committee that you're looking for, and no financial ties to it, how long would it take to get it to the floor and reconcile it with the House version?
Well, I would hope quickly, and then we get it to the governor's desk. This has bipartisan support, and people are interested in getting these protections to our emergency service personnel. And when I mean that, it's not just law enforcement, Mike. I mean, this is firefighters, this is dispatchers, this is correctional officers. These are emergency room triage folks. I mean, think about if you go to a mass casualty site, you maybe didn't see how the casualty occurred, but you are still seeing those human beings in horrible conditions, and your job is to help them, and you can't unsee that stuff.
Exactly. And it takes a while to process it. It just does. Yeah. It's a good thing that that stigma is, you know, we're working to remove that.
Absolutely.
You know, the no man is an island kind of a thing, working together. Moving on, we're in the middle of an outbreak of COVID. It's starting to show itself very prominently in the state and even in Wisconsin. How is that affecting things at the Capitol this week?
Well, it's definitely a time where our communications definitely need to be 100%. And so we're trying to do that. I will say this, that as I've stated before on your program, $22 million was approved for COVID to help with equipment, with testing, with personnel, and just making sure that we are prepared. Commissioner Malcolm is the best in the business, in my opinion, and we are so blessed to have her in the Department of Health. And she's been in contact with, say, the Department of Education, trying to guide the Department of Education and then the local school districts on a process and expectations to help keep the children safe. As of right now, there has been no decision to close schools down, but they have asked if we're on spring break, and if you have traveled to especially any of the countries that are of concern, to not return to school for 2 weeks after spring break. That is right now, but I tell you what, by the time this story airs, Mike, it's going to be a different scenario more than likely. So then you have the Department of Corrections, for example. She's been in contact with them and advising them no visitation. For right now, they're going to look at how you do it through closed captioned television. So I think that the continued communication between the administration, the legislative branch, the judicial branch, the public, all has to continue and do our best to keep the public safe, to make sure that this the number of cases, the outbreak doesn't spike and overburden our emergency rooms, our ICUs. The most vulnerable are the elderly and folks with underlying health problems, say a respiratory issue. We need to protect those people. And again, I'm going to say, as I said before, just use your best public health practices that your mother taught you and your grandma reminded you of, which is sneeze into your arm, wash your hands very frequently, change out your hand towels, make sure that you're wiping down your cell phone, make sure you're wiping down flat surfaces, and basically you've seen that we've canceled a lot of large group gatherings, whether it's been conventions. Every major league sporting division, professional sport, has postponed or canceled. NCAA has canceled. Stay out of, let's practice social distancing, stay out of big gatherings and areas. But also, you know, everybody's going to need toilet paper, everybody's going to need hand sanitizer and antibacterial soap. So please also think of that as well.
All right. And we will get through this. I think it'll be something. We've been through these kind of situations before. This one's a little bit different. But
one more thing is that we are looking at, on the federal level and on the state level, Mike, legislation that would help with folks that need paid time off, especially those hourly wage workers. There's a lot of concern about how you're going to handle if a business gets shut down, a small business. Hospitality industry is very concerned. So we are looking at those types of things. And then we also are looking at making sure that there's no penalties. Like, for example, if you were off for 2 weeks and then your water bill's due, that doesn't get shut off, or your electric doesn't get shut off. It's things like that that we really have to be, you know, having discussions and passing legislation through, both on a federal and state level.
Okay. Speaking about that, moving on a little bit, I understand that the governor has proposed his supplemental budget. Can you go over that a little bit for us?
Yes, the state has a positive balance of about $1.5 billion, and so a lot of that is one-time money. And I am very pleased that the governor has proposed a very reasonable and very responsible budget. It's exactly what I would have done, because he leaves over $1 billion on the bottom line. He pays back the reserves that we used last year for the budget, the two-year biennium budget. He has money in there for the courts, and he has money in there for making sure that the rape kits are being tested, the backlog that the BCA had. He has additional money for the disaster assistance account, which is very, very important, especially coming up here in the spring. We also have additional funds for Veterans Affairs, for homelessness and suicide prevention, and increase in child care grants. This is very good use of one-time money, not ongoing funds. So to put most of it in our on the bottom line, which will fall to the next year, which we do a budget then, a biennial budget, is very important because of the uncertainty in the economy. I mean, don't even think to look at your 401k or any of that, because it's the economy is very much going to be in flux for a little bit here when it comes to the coronavirus, when it comes to tariffs, when it comes to just the geopolitical issues that are going on. And we really have to prepare for the fact we will not have a surplus going into November or into the next year. And so this is very, very good. I could not be more pleased with how he has presented this and provided stability into the future for Minnesota's economy.
And do you see any issues across the aisle or across the houses getting this passed?
No, you know, I was on a different program last year, or the other night, with Republicans, and they both sang the praises of the governor's decision, because I think we all want to make sure that when we do a budget next year that we're not starting from behind intentionally. And so this is a good way to make sure that, you know, we will not put ourselves, you know, starting a step behind. And I think they understand that. And we understand that there's inflation isn't accounted for in that number of $1.5 billion. And so I think we just need to continue to be cautious and reasonable and rational when we look at the one-time money. And this is exactly what that budget does.
All right, good. I would like to change gears a little bit here and talk about some other little specific items that are moving through the legislature. The Insulin for All efforts and the Rural Finance Authority. Let's start with the Insulin for All. Tell me what's going on with that one.
So I was very pleased to support the bill that went through the Senate. I'm hoping it's going to come out looking more like the House, because it's not a perfect bill, and it does have some concerns in it. But again, I'm not up there to be an obstructionist. I'm there for progress. And so hopefully when it comes back through conference committee, it'll be better. So as we know, the cost of insulin has tripled over the last 10 years, and the idea of Insulin for All has been going on for quite a while, trying to get through a process, and Big Pharma has fought it every step of the way. And so you know, what this bill does is it allows access for folks for emergencies for insulin, and no one should go without life-saving insulin. And it also puts a fine on manufacturers that don't participate or that aren't following the program. It's a $75 copay, which to me is too high. The House has $25. It also has a sunset in the program at 2023. I think that's a bad idea, because then pharma is just going to come back at 2024 and start doing it again. And so also it only allows for a 30-day supply, where the House has 90 days. So again, I think there are some things that we could make it better, but we have to get something in place, and this is a step in the right direction. I'm hopeful that we can get a compromise through both the House and the Senate and to the governor. No reason why we can't. Much like a lot of pieces of legislation, it isn't perfect, but it gets us in the right direction where we need to go, and we can build on it next year if need be, or fix it next year if need be. But we need to do this for Minnesotans. Minnesotans' lives depend on this. But I just also want to say, Mike, that this isn't just about insulin. There's a lot of other prescription drugs that are not affordable for people that need them. So we need to continue to work on the affordability issue, and we've done some of that over the last couple of years. But we still have a lot of long way to go to do that. We should be able to bulk buy, you know, here prescription drugs that are commonly used that will lower the price. There are a lot of things that we can and should do and continue to work on in the legislature.
Okay. And as far as you're aware, I know this is probably a bit out there, but are insulin manufacturers still limited to a very low number of them? I know for a while there was one company that...
There's three companies that do it. So, of course, that's an issue just looking at the economics of it, right? And how our society works with that. So, and they also... generic issues are because the three of them own it. You know, they hold down any ability for generic. So there's a lot of things that happen on the business side. And so we need to continue to shine light on those and continue to work with our providers, our manufacturers on doing this. But the one thing I'm going to say is they make a lot of money off of this product that a lot of people need, and that is unacceptable. And I don't know, fun fact, but the person who patented this, that developed this and patented it, sold it for $1.
Yeah, I remember that.
Because they knew how important it was.
Let's go over a little bit. We have got just about a minute or so left. Let's go over the Rural Finance Authority and what's going on there.
So this week, the Senate passed an appropriation of $50 million for the Rural Finance Authority, and that is money used to finance loans, whether it's economic development and just helping our farmers. This is a big, finance program for them, and it's very important. It started in the 1980s, you know, when we had the farming crisis. So this has been a very good program for our farmers because it's better than what they can get on the private market for loans. And so I'm hoping it goes to the governor and gets signed, and we'll have this available for our farmers.
All right. And as I understand it, the program right now has no funds. Is that correct? We're kind of backdating things, or not really backdating, but it seems to me I remember hearing that the loan pool was pretty much dried up.
It was dried up. And so I think this will replenish that and make these funds available, and will hopefully have a very positive effect in greater Minnesota and outstate Minnesota for economic development, and also helping our farmers leverage those loans to do what they need to do, which is grow food.
Exactly. We're just about done here. I'd like to thank Senator Bigham for coming in to share with us. Once again, Senator, just really quickly give us your contact information if anybody has questions or concerns.
The Senate website is the best place to sign up for my emails, and being able to get a hold of me, you can email me at sen.carla@senate.mn. And also you feel free to call at 651-297-8060.
All right. Thank you, Senator Bigham, for your time. You're listening to KDWA AM 1460, FM 97.7.
I'm just a bill. Yes, I'm only a bill. And I'm sitting here on Capitol Hill.
It's not easy to become a law, is it?
No, but how I hope and pray that I will. But today I am still just a bill. He signed.